I'm going to begin with a story that I received permission to share, okay, and use it as I think as a springboard to study a certain event in this week's parasha, and hopefully it's something that relates to all of us. I think that it's something that's an issue that all of us deal with and struggle with. So a parent came to me and asked my opinion about a certain matter with regard to the school. If you want me not to say, I won't. It's okay. Good. Fine. There is a parent, you know, for the tape, we'll keep it anonymous, whose daughter is graduating from the school, and there's an issue that comes up each and every year, which is what will the tochen, the content of the graduation ceremony be, i.e., will it involve singing and some kind of dancing on the part of the girls or not? And apparently each and every year the girls always did some kind of, you know, Broadway show or some kind of number or what have you. And the parent and the young woman are both uncomfortable with the idea that they'll be performing in front of the parents, in front of their parents, including their fathers. And so the parents are, I think, very legitimately trying to campaign to encourage the school to create a program where all of the girls will be comfortable. And obviously, you know, in a school that's of a mixed, certainly broader,
eclectic,
is that the word? Group of people, which is not just a specific group, it becomes challenging because some parents, you know, say they want their kids to dance and some parents say they don't want to. And these parents are encouraging their daughter to do what she thinks is right, but in addition to try to get other parents to join them so that there's a group of kids who are not comfortable, and maybe they'll encourage the school as a group to change the program, which I wholeheartedly agree with. But what I did point out was that it's a great example or a great way of, you know, the father said to me, he said, it's very painful for my daughter, you know, because he said what happened was the other class started to practice, and there was a girl in the other class who also didn't want to participate. So she sat on the side while they were practicing. And of course, what did all the other girls start to say to her?
Dosit.
That's exactly what they said. Very good. You heard
what
this story?
Say?
Oh, you're a dosit. You never heard anyone should know this terminology. Very important terminology. Okay? The term dosit.
Dosit?
No, I don't know. I don't know. I don't speak South African. A dosit can either be a badge of pride for someone who is dosi, who is a little more religious, or it can also be a sort of derogatory term for someone who's too religious. Oh, you're a dosit. You know what I'm saying? So, charidosim? I never heard that one. That's even worse. Okay. You know, and it was very painful for her. This girl was concerned. And so I said, well, this is it's a very interesting and unique opportunity, because on the one hand, it's frightening for her, and it's intimidating, and, you know, to be an adolescent girl and to be singled out is very painful. But on the other hand, how do you educate your children, and how do we deal with the issue that there will always be a time in life where you will be going against the grain? You will be, whatever you want to use the analogy, swimming against the tide, going against the stream, whatever you want to say, where you have to stand up and say, no, even though everyone else is doing it a certain way, this is what I believe in, and this is the way I want to do it. And it's not a simple matter. It's a difficult and challenging and a painful experience. But I mean, you don't want your daughter to have to learn that, I guess, in sixth grade for her graduation. Just as an editorial aside, I personally don't believe that sixth grade needs a graduation at all. But that's just my thing. Very nice. Go to seventh grade. Have a good day. Okay, but
it's only because you don't want to sit through the 3 hours.
Oh,
show.
Lord!
If it was 45 minutes.
What in the world?
If
the principal got up and just said, "Good job, Mazel Tov, have a nice summer," I would be very happy. And here's your little Sidor. It'd be great. But, like, you know, I don't get the whole Broadway show. You know what I'm saying? It's my teacher. Yeah.
Issues, but understand the issues because I was discussing it. I don't think the issue is the Broadway show.
because I think that God trying to put in top and show of things that they've learned throughout the year. I don't think it's bad for girls to express themselves in dances. Singing.
Right.
But the problem is, they should not be there.
Correct.
And I think education needs to be done to the fathers and told to grow up. You don't need to be there to watch your daughter dance or your daughter's friends dancing for that matter. You can go and listen to the speech and get the certificate, see her getting her certificate or whatever. And then go home and let the mother stay and watch the girls perform.
Here, whatever you want. That's a good solution. I totally agree. That's the solution you want, but that's the solution you'll never have. You'll never get that. You know what I'm saying? I agree. But I would also say, nonetheless, like me personally, I want to emphasize, I still send my children there. I will send my daughter to the school because I believe in the school, and I think it's important for us to say, for all of us to say, this is our school, and we're going to impart our values into the school as opposed to running away and saying we're going to find a place where, you know, where everything is perfect the way we want it to be. Larger issue. Okay. How did this come up? Obviously, in the story, because we're reading Parashat Shelach this week, the story of the Meraglim, right? And as we all know, right, in the Meraglim, how many Meraglim were there?
12.
How many of them were bad? Are you sure?
How many of them were bad?
How many of them go off the derech? How many? What do you mean? They were tough.
Not so clear that they were bad.
Well, we're going to assume.
Oh, they got 4 years of punishment.
Yeah. What? Are you into the labeling thing? Right,
yeah,
you know, right. They weren't bad. They did bad things. Okay. That's what you meant, right?
Yeah,
come on. I would just disagree just by quoting you on Midrash. The Gemara. Let's start in Shelach. I mean, we're gonna go through a series of a few psukim, and we're gonna ask ourselves the question: what happened? How is it that Yehoshua and Kalev don't find themselves caught up in the Meraglim? When you've got these 12 guys and they're all in a group and we're like, yeah, we're all gonna go together and whatever, and for some reason Yehoshua, both Yehoshua and especially Kalev is especially interesting, don't succumb to the peer pressure of the Meraglim and don't succumb to the flow of it'll never happen, we can't do it. You know, and in a sense, because Kalev and Yehoshua, because Kalev stands up, it's almost impossible to know what would have happened.
Are your eggs ready?
Oh, yeah, can you just turn it off? Oops, totally forgot about him. Thank you. What would have happened if Kalev didn't stand up? If nobody stood up for Hashem, if there was no Kalev, could Moshe have said anything? Could Moshe have saved the Jewish people? And hard to say. It's really almost impossible to say. But the fact that Moshe did stand up, that Kalev did stand up, could then Moshe could have him say, it's not everybody. You have to save the nation. There's hope for the future. And it's almost impossible to know what would have happened if Kalev hadn't gone against the grain and Kalev hadn't stood up. So what was it? What saved him? What gave him the strength to say, this is what I believe in, and despite all the pressure, and we're going to see significant danger, despite that, I'm still going to do what I think is the appropriate and the correct thing to do. Let's turn to the beginning of Shelach. Okay, and we'll start with the name. So obviously Hashem says, send the Meraglim. Please turn to Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Ket Zayin. Elish Shemota Anashim, chapter 13, verse 16. Elish Shemota Anashim Asher Shalach Moshe Laktur Et Haaretz. Right? These are the names of the people that Moshe sent Laktur to spy out the land. Vayikra Moshe L'Hoshea Bin Nun Yehoshua. And Moshe called Hoshea Bin Nun Yehoshua. Now let's stop here. Obviously, what's the problem? What's the question? What's the issue? He added a yod to his name, that we know. What's the question? That's correct. Where's the
list?
What do you mean the list?
The
oh, no, I skipped them.
Oh,
yeah. They're all there, right? I just didn't want to go through all the names. Shamua ben Zakur, Shafan ben Korin. Okay. What's the question, Zavara?
Why?
Why did Moshe call Hoshea bin Nun Yehoshua? Why did he add a yod to his name? And actually, an even more interesting question is, when? When did Moshe call Hoshea bin Nun Yehoshua? So let's look at Rashi for a second. like Rav Moshe Loshe Abin Nun Yehoshua, says Rashi, all this is quoting the Midrash. There's a piece of Gemara in Sota that goes through all the Midrashim on the story of Naraglim, and some of them are powerful Midrashim. Okay? Says Rashi, Hitpalel alav, he davened for him, Ya Yoshi'acha Me'atzat Miraglim. What is Yehoshua? Hoshea is small. It's Ya Hoshi'acha. Right? May God save you. Because why? You're going to need it. That's absolutely correct. You're going to need it. So Rina, who claims that they weren't all bad from the beginning, right? The Midrash totally disagrees and says that from the beginning, from the outset, the Meraglim went on their mission with the intention of criticizing Eretz Yisrael and saying negative things about Eretz Yisrael.
I don't think so. I think it points to Moshe's understanding of human nature, that they're dealing with a really scary situation and they potential to see the negative more obviously than the positive is very strong.
But I still don't understand, Rina, then why does Moshe only call him Yehoshua? What Moshe should have said is, hey, Shaphat, I'm calling you Yehoshaphat. And Shamua, I'm calling you Yishama. And Kalev, it's Yikalev, Yehokalev.
He had a relationship.
What?
He had a relationship.
Correct. So, like, that's like so unfair. You guys are going into a really dangerous situation. Hey, you know, you who I know and I care about and I like, Hashem should protect you.
But everybody else.
Oh, right.
Because he knew that Yehoshua had gone to the extra length to form a kesher with Moshe. I think there was something special about him.
What are you struggling with? You're struggling with the question of why only Yehoshua? If Moshe knew that they were going, that things were going in a bad way, why only Yehoshua? I'm really sorry. Okay.
He already proved himself.
Baruch Hashem, but I'm really sorry. You know, I'm sorry. I should have taken care of it before. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm saying he'd already beforehand proven himself as somebody who was going further than other people to connect to Moshe and everything Moshe was teaching and trying to.
Or maybe because he knew the type of personality so well, he knew
Yehoshua.
He knew that he would always see the upside of everything.
So then, what does he need the bracha for? What does he need the?
Because maybe he needs the bracha to like contain him a bit and keep a perspective.
Okay, so it's just interesting to know. It's just interesting to know that even from the beginning. Or Aruch Chaim points out, it's so interesting, if you look at the names of all these guys, like, the names are, like, there's something missing in all their names. Most of them. What?
Hashem's
name. Except for a couple of them, which I don't get, like Yi'u'el, like, or Ami'el. Most of them are Gadi ben Susi, you know, Situr ben Michael, Gadi, Situr, Nachbi, Vafsi, you know, like, they always comment on the names, they're just very interesting names, like, you know, when you name your children, when we name our children, very often, you know, you're going to name, you know, we name our children with Hashem's name in it. Like that, and we choose names of people who are models of behavior, a certain kind of behavior. Whereas, so the names of a person really, I believe, say very much. You know, this when we named our daughter, like, it really almost, it's very intimidating in a sense, because here you are, in one act, you are defining how this person will relate to themselves, what this person will answer to for the rest of their life.
Why your daughter and not this time?
No, just this time, because I just named her. So you know what I'm saying? Yeah, it just happened recently. You know what I'm saying? And like,
I was thinking I didn't have that opportunity.
What's that?
I was thinking I didn't have that opportunity because I don't have girls. But I didn't
have sure you did. No, just, you know what I'm saying? But here, it's such a powerful thing. From now on, anytime someone says Moria, she will turn around. But if someone says Yael, she won't. I'm not talking to her. And what does that say about her? How does that influence her to be identified with this name? It's a very powerful thing. So Or Chaim says that the names of the Meraglim, they set Moshe off, and he says something's really wrong, and he therefore he said Hoshea is not enough. It's got to be Yehoshua. There's an interesting, one more interesting point about the names. If we look at Rashbam, if you have a Rashbam on Pasuk Yud Zayin, okay, Rashbam says, Lo ata kara otoken. Didn't happen now. Shari kvar kodem laken nikra Yehoshua. He's already called Yehoshua before. which I guess makes sense. If you look at Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Chafet, he already called him. He's already named Yoshua. Elakach Perusho.
The Torah also refers to him.
Yeah, he's referred to earlier. Correct. This is what it means. Hoshea bin Nun. This guy, Hoshea. She'amarnu lemala shenikra kein bebeit Aviv. Hu otashik kara Moshe Yehoshua. Shina'asah mishartu v'yifkido beito. He said, this guy, Hoshea. Vayikra Moshe al Hoshea bin Nun. Moshe had called Hoshea bin Nun Yoshua. So what's interesting, what's especially interesting is, according to Rosh Ram, he has to answer the following question. Why is the Torah now explaining that Moshe had previously changed Hoshea's name to Yehoshua? And the answer would be the same. Which is, why is it being mentioned here? Things are not, this is not an easy mission, this is not a simple matter. So the Torah says, and that guy Hoshea, Moshe had renamed him Yehoshua. Yes.
Okay, I go back to my original comments, mm-hmm. that I still think that this speaks to the unique relationship between Yoshua and Moshe.
Correct.
That's why he named him and didn't change the names of the other Meraglim, because he had a relationship with him. To change somebody's name is a big, it's a father act to do something like that. It's the father who gives the name, isn't that? And Yoshua is Mesharet Moshe.
Mm-hmm.
So he had that relationship that enabled Moshe to be able to change his name.
I saw somewhere, I think, but even though this is alluded
because,
to. Oh, Rashbam says, he
because
says...
Because if you say, according to what you're saying, that the Meraglim are all bad, and that he was trying to protect Yehoshua, then why didn't, you know, then we're
why
back
protect
to that
everybody
question.
Else?
Why didn't he protect all of them, or why didn't he also protect Kalev? Or how is Kalev so strong that he could resist it, even despite the fact that...
That's our question. That's what we're going to struggle with. Why? What was unique about Kalev that he didn't
why
succumb?
Didn't he stop them?
Why did he stop them?
If he knew, like, choose a different group.
Who chose them? Yeah.
You know, I think we all saw this week that sometimes you see things coming, and, like, things get out of hand, and you can't prevent people from falling over themselves. Now, the people asked. Hashem said, "Here's this mission. It could go well. It could go badly." Moshe just had this. He just saw it going badly. He just didn't think that it was going to go well.
I think it's more about just changing the name, sure, but I think the Torah is trying to emphasize the relationship that he didn't have with Moshe.
Uh-huh.
It's less about the name, it's more about the kesher and the relationship.
But let's just go back to Rashi, right?
It's been this dogma sheep for him, and obviously something's rubbed off, and he's going on this mission.
Just go back to Rashi, though. According to Rashi, what do you have to say? Rashi said he saw what was going to happen, and he prayed to save Yehoshua. That's what it actually says.
Because Yehoshua was the one who was in his control to influence in that way.
Okay.
I don't think he saw Ruach HaKodesh. I think he saw the potential in such a scary, negative situation.
Okay, yes.
I think there's also a different expectation in Yehoshua as his second in command, and as, you know, already had he been chosen, designated as the person that would lead them. I mean, I guess not, because Moshe hadn't been punished yet. But already with Aaron, like, the person that was under Moshe had already failed B'nai Yisrael,
uh-huh.
and here another one was going out into a position where they were going to...
Well, Yeshua clearly was a leader. Yeshua led the battle against Amalek, so Yeshua certainly had a different role than everybody else. I think that's fair to say. So you could say Moshe saw Yeshua as like the de facto leader of the group, and he gave him a name and said, here, I'm hoping that this will go well. Let's go on. Perek Yud Gimel Pasuk Yud Kaf Aleph. We're going to skip to Pasuk Kaf Aleph. It's like you got a stamp for them. You know, like. Okay. Vaya'alu vayatu et ha'aretz. Okay. And they went up. Moshe sends them on their way. Right? And they went up and they, vayaturu, they spied out the land. Mimidbar tzirad rechov levo chamat. From the Sin Desert until rechov levo chamat. I should know my geography better. Pasuk habet. Vaya'alu banegev. Vayavo ad chevron. And they went up into the Negev, and he came to Hebron, and there was Achiman Sheshai Talmai, the children of the giants. The Hebron, Sheva Shanim Nivnata, Lifnei Tzoan Misraim. Hebron was built 7 years before. There's an obvious challenging problem in the language of the text. What's the problem? Did anybody notice it? Read Pasuk Chafpet and see if you can figure out what's the problem with the text. Good. Explain, please.
Plural and singular.
Can everybody see it? Let's read it again. Vayalu banegev, and they went up into the Negev. Who's they?
The
Meraglim. Vayavo ad Chevron, and
he came.
He came. Right. Obvious question. Who's he? And why? What's they? Let's look at Rashi again. Okay? Vayavo ad Hebron, says Rashi. Kalev levado halachsha. Only one guy went to Hebron. And who was that? Kalev. Why? V'nishtateach al kivrei avot. He prostrated himself on the kvarim of the avot. Why? Shelo yehe nisat lachaverav lihiyot ba'atzatam. So that he should not be seduced by his friends to be included in their plot. B'cheinu omer, and furthermore it says later, v'lo eten et ha'aretz asher darachba. Kalev was therefore later given the land he inherited Hebron in his Yerusha. He inherited Hebron, the place where he walked, Uchtiv, and it says later, Vayitnu le Kalev et Hebron. So it says, Vayavo et Hebron. The Midrash says, who went to Hebron? Kalev. Why did Kalev go to Hebron? Who was buried in Hebron?
The Avot.
He went to Marana Machpelah. Why did he go to Marana Machpelah? He went to Kever Avot to Davin. Why did he go to Davin? They were all staying at the same hotels. And when they're there at night, so they're comparing notes. So, Bach Nachbi, what did you think?
Is this where we had the idea to go to Kvar Amun
Tavim? I think. The question is, what does it do? What does it do when you go to Kever Avot? Why did color? What's that? How?
Inheritance.
What's that?
Just focuses you on
your mission.
Yeah, this is the promise that Hashem gave to them, and it just refocuses you that to connect with that, to connect with what they were trying to achieve.
Okay, but even more than that,
you're not davening to them.
You're not davening to them, correct?
They should inspire you to remember what you
see. Is it you look at it as personal inspiration? I think there's much more to it than that. Okay, when you go to what's that? Correct. There's a strong element of zchut avot. Right? You're invoking the zchut of the avot who acquired the land, and also especially the Kalev's mission is to try to bring the Bnei Israel to the land of the avot. Right? So much of what they were about, the reason they were buried in this place is because they wanted to inquire, to take over this place, the land of Eretz Israel. So Kalev said, how could I go to Eretz Israel, spy out the land, and not go to Kever Avot, not end up in Hebron? Now, I'll be honest with you and say, I'm not big into, grave hopping at all. I'm too much of a, what's the word I'm looking for?
Rationalist.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Yeah. Cynic? Did you call me a cynic? But it's like you said, it's in Rashi, it's in the Midrash, it's clearly there's a value in it, the language. What strikes me in here is the language of the Rashi, nishtateach al kivrei avot, right? What's the word? There's a similar word in Hebrew called a shatiach. What's a shatiach?
Carpet.
A carpet. Why is it a carpet? Because it's spread out. Like he went and he
spread himself
out on kivrei avot. He prostrated himself on the kivrei avot. He almost wanted to feel the koach of the avot in some sense, that they should protect him. Right? But what also does that tell us, so interestingly? That just for
he
was scared.
And no, but he was scared about what the tone that he was hearing from the Maran.
Right, from our broader lesson is Kalev knew that he was going up against a group. It was him against everybody else. And he knew that he couldn't do it alone. So in order to stand up to the pressure that he was going to face, he went to the Ribono Shel Olam and he went to the Avot and he said, if I'm going to succeed, I'm only going to succeed because I'm following your footsteps and I'm coming to invoke Zchut Avot. By the way, we all agree with this. How do I know we all agree with this? It's in Ebrish Mon Esrei. What does Ebrish Mon Esrei start out with? Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. Right? Why don't we say that? I once heard a beautiful pshat. Say that or I made it up, I don't remember. So imagine that you needed a loan. Okay? So you went to the bank and you walked into Danny, the manager of the bank. Does anybody here not know Danny, the manager of the bank? Okay? And somebody here knows it. And he said, Donnie, I need $400,000 to irrigate my house. And Donnie says,
you must have a very big house.
Yes, you must have a very big house. You don't have the documentation, I can't help you. But imagine you went to Donnie, and it turns out that your grandparents, and Donnie's grandparents came from the same village, same shtetl in Poland. So you start talking, and you say, oh, my grandfather knew your grandfather in Fufludged, and they used to go to Cheder together. all of a sudden the same loan that Danny couldn't legitimately give you, somehow he can find a way to do it. And that's what we say to, well, maybe Danny wouldn't, but okay, let's somehow, but that's what we say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We say, even if I'm going to come ask you for a bunch of things when I say Shemona Asrei, so even if you don't, even if by myself I'm not meritorious, I'm not worthy of the things that you're about to give me, what? I've got protexia. Right? We like to call it vitamin P in this country. You know, okay, Abraham. Remember Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov? Remember them? Oh, yeah, yeah, I remember them. That's my grandfather. And Kalev invoked that as well. And it's a very powerful notion when you're trying to go against the grain, when you're trying to stand up to do what's right. To understand that I'm part of a chain. That you're not standing on your own. You know, one could even take it a step further and say, who went against the grain more than Abraham Avinu? Right? What is Abraham known as? Abraham Ha'ivri. What does Ivri stand for? Me'aver HaNahar. Right? They called him Abraham from the other side of the river. Right? Abraham the contrarian. Everybody is polytheistic, and there's this one nut who seems to believe in one God. Okay, Abraham. And Kalev went to him and said, I need your help. Very powerful. Very, very powerful. Let's move on. Okay? So they go on their mission. I just want to see if there's a midrash, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Here. I don't want to read the language of the midrash that Rashi was based on. This is a Gemara in Sota, again. Says the Gemara the following. Vayavo mi barilei. It shouldn't say vayavo. It should say vayavo'u. Amar Rava. This is from the Gemara. Melamed sheperash kalev mi atzat miraglim. Kalev peirash me'atzat raglim. He separated himself from their intentions. V'halach, and he went. V'nishtatech al kivrei avot. Same language. And he spread himself, he prostrated himself on the kivrei avot. Amar lahem. And he said to them, Avotai, bakshu alei rachamim she'anatzel me'atzat raglim. Please pray for my compassion that I should be saved from atzat raglim. Okay, so, and the Midrash has another question as well. What about Yoshua? How come only Kalev was the one who said, V'ilu Yoshua, Shkvar Bikesh Moshe la Brachamim. Yoshua didn't need the protexia. Why?
He already
had protexia from Moshe.
It's interesting also in terms of their personalities that Yoshua is relying on someone else, whereas Kalev is taking the initiative to get his own protector.
I think that we're going to see, and I believe this, that in this story, Yehoshua is almost easier.
Very passive.
Well, Yeshua, he's very passive, but Yehoshua has...
Later, doesn't he? Like,
yes,
he doesn't,
we're going to get to it. Yehoshua's status, though, is different, because Yehoshua's Moshe's prize student. Everybody expects Yehoshua to toe the party line. So in a sense, what Yehoshua says isn't really important. Because, you know, like, you could imagine, Moshe sends his prize student, what's he going to say? Of course he's going to say good things. And everybody else can say, if it was Yeshua against the other 11, everybody else would say, you can't believe a word that guy said. But when somebody else comes, when Kalev shows up and says it, that's already something. Kalev ben Yefuneh. And what Shevet is he from?
Huda.
That's serious.
Yehuda also did that with the Mechivat Yosef. Yehuda kind of went against the grain and said, let's not kill him.
Except.
In the end, but it was the beginning of his coming out.
And Nachshon, very good. Okay, so it's an attribute of Yehuda, which is, which only means that the attribute of leadership means, it starts with, you want to lead?
Do the right thing.
You do the right thing. Despite, we're going to see, unbelievable pressure. Despite unbelievable pressure. Let's move on. Okay? They come back. We're going to skip a little bit because I want to go and go to certain... Turn to Pasuk Chafei. Perak Yud Gimel. Pasuk Chafei. What are you doing? Okay. Tammy? Thank you. Okay. How are we doing with that? Vayashuvu mi... What?
It's doing well.
Fine. Vayashuvu mi tur haaretz. They return from their little sojourning in the land, their tiyul, miketa b'ayim, after 40 days. Okay? Again, it's not yours. Right. Again, what is miketa b'ayim? Rashi says, why 40 days? Rashi says something so interesting. Rashi says, like, if you had to walk from Jordan, or whatever, from like now current Saudi Arabia, all the way to the Hermon and back, how long would it take you?
Less.
What? Less?
Well, you start to the Hermon, then you go to the
didn't.
Okay, to the Golan, to the Galil.
To the
Galil. Fine, if you had to walk from Saudi Arabia to the Galil. What? They were in... They went down to Hebron, south of the Negev. Yes, okay, south of the Negev. They went up through Hebron, all the way back up to the Galil, and then back, walking.
May Rav ask me today why Johnny doesn't walk to work?
That's a good question. It would take more than 40 days. Just, let's assume, just for the Midrashic purposes. So the Rashi says, based on the Midrash, Hashem caused them kvitzat haderech. Why? Because he knew that they were going to be punished a year per day. So therefore, you only allowed it to go for 40 days.
Why were they close?
Why were they walking? Meaning, what should they have been? Riding?
Yeah.
That goes to a much larger issue of what was the purpose of the mission, which we're not discussing today, and you know, I'm coming at from a very certain perspective. But a lot of the mission was about kibush haaretz, right, staking a claim. And it wasn't so much about spying it out. It was like... There's huge Torahs about this that you can find on the internet. Go to, if you really are interested in the lumdus of the purpose of the mission. And
who said they walked?
I did it last year? No, it's not a last year, because last year I saw it's about telling the truth.
But it doesn't say that they walked.
It's about the military purpose of
Yeah.
The
It doesn't say that they walked. It's Vayalchu Vayavo Amosha, when they came back.
Vayalchu means they went? Vayavo. And by the way, just on the Rashi, what did look at Rashi on Vayalchu Vayavo? See Rashi vayelchu vayavo the hakisha lichatan lebiatan is also from that same Gemara. Ma biatan beitzara'a, af halichatan beitzara'a. Right? They left with negative evil intentions and they came back with negative intentions. Right? According to the Midrash, this was a what's the word for it? It was a
foreshadowing.
No. It was some kind of job. Con job, not a con job. It was decided from the beginning.
Foregone conclusion.
What's that? Foregone conclusion. Thank you. Okay. We came to the land that you sent. It's beautiful. I got to tell you, it's gorgeous. Just to share with you the very famous midrash that everyone should be aware of. Rashi says, if you ever want people to believe your lies. Right? If you want to believe that you are a peaceful humanitarian, you have to carry some supplies in your boat. Because otherwise they'll just think you're a bunch of terrorist sympathizers looking to lock the flotilla. But so therefore if you put some supplies for the poor citizens in your boat, then everybody will say, "Oh, poor, you know, peace protesters." Okay? So just if you ever want people to believe your lies, you have to tell them a little bit of truth. So it says a little bit. Here's the fruit. See, it's beautiful. Yeah, it is really nice.
Bait.
Right. Efes. Ki azam, but it's worth nothing. Efes. We'll never get there because they're too powerful.
This is what we did last time.
Yeah. There's a big Ramban on that. All I know is I saw yesterday. I called the shir to tell the truth, and I think I asked. Why did they lie or something like that? I don't remember. Okay. You can look at it. I spoke to that, I guess, if you want. Okay. Ki azam etarot v'arim b'tzuro g'dolo ma'od v'gam yilei ha'anak ra'inu sham. Listen, there's huge cities there. They're fortified. There's giants there. Amalek yoshei be'eretz ha'negev ha'chiti v'ayivuzi v'amur yoshei bahar. Negev? Forget about it. Mountain areas? No way. V'aknani yoshei v'al hayam? What about, the coastal region? Sorry. Okay. V'ad al-yam e'ardein. Jordan Valley? No. You know what I'm saying? Not going to work. We just pick an area. It's too strong, too fortified. Pasuk Lamed. Vayahas Kalev et Ha'am El Moshe. Who's got it in English? What does it say? Translate.
Kalev stilled the people.
Yeah, read on.
Toward Moshe.
Kalev stilled the people toward Moshe. Okay, now you have it in English. Can you tell me what that means?
Silence.
What does Kalev still the people toward Moshe?
She calmed and hold on. Listen to what Moshe
said. What? Kalev silenced the people. Yeah, keep on. Ushatik. Hold on, wait. Before we get to all the parshanim, what are we struggling with?
El Moshe.
What is the word, meaning of the word? Vayahas. What's that?
They're going to lynch him.
Who?
Kalev.
Moshe. And let's see, one second. Vayas Kalev. So what does the word Vayahas mean? And what does it mean, Vayas El Moshe? If it means he silenced them, it should say Vayas Kalev Echam. What is the El Moshe? How do I silence somebody towards him? Be quiet.
Said something.
It doesn't translate on the tape.
No, it's going to stop saying the Lashon Hara.
Yeah.
So that they would be open to listen to what Moshe.
Okay. Very good. Very nice. Okay. Vayahas. What does the word mean? Vayahas. He silenced them.
Okay. Well, he placated them.
This is a beautiful word, Vayahas.
No, he placated them.
Placated them?
Yeah.
How? What did he say?
Flakash.
Very good. Has. Vayahas. A very powerful word. Meaning?
Hush.
Quiet. Has. It's a great word. Vayahas. Okay?
That's where hash is from?
I wouldn't know, but I wouldn't be surprised. You'd have to ask a linguist. But yes, exactly how they interpret it. Who says it? Somebody's there. I think I underlined it. One of the, look at the Rashbam or Ibn Ezra or somebody. Talk about Vayahas. Anybody there? Just so you know, for your personal understanding, if you want to know meanings of words in general, Ibn Ezra and Rashbam are what we call Pashtanim, right? And their often goal in the Pshat is to give you the explanation of the words, as opposed to others like Rashi or Ramban or many others who are looking for deeper meaning, deeper Pshat. So anybody, does it say anything there? What?
Ramban says
Shatakotam. Okay. Rashi says the same thing. Vayas Kalev. Hishtik et kulam El Moshe. We'll look at Rashi. What does it mean, El Moshe? Lishmoa mai shiyadaber Moshe b'Moshe. He got them quiet in order, this is where the English comes from, in order to allow Moshe to speak. How did he do it? Yeah. What are you reading?
Avi Ezer.
Avi Ezer. Okay.
Avi Ezer is a pirush.
He's a pirush of the Ibn Ezra.
So he's trying to explain because Ibn Ezra says, Rabbi Yonah Medakik says, Ta'amol Shamar Hasu. He said Hasu.
Meaning what? What does that mean, Ta'amol Shamar? What does it mean? Shamar Hasu.
Shut.
Meaning what?
Shut.
Shut up. Yeah.
He bemet bahushtikam kinemar ha'anashim ha'shar lulimo.
Right, he stood on, very good.
That's the
Midrash. First stood on his soapbox, and he said, Hass, quiet. Everybody be quiet. So and it's from the Midrash, it's very nice. Okay, let's read Rashi. Because Rashi says that Kalev was in an even more precarious position than we think. Says Rashi, Tzavach va'amar. How did he get them to be quiet? How do you get people who are screaming to be quiet? V'chizu belvad asa lanu ben Amram. You think that's all Ben Amram? Who's Ben Amram? Did to us?
That's the name that they give him when they're
When they're mad, like when your parents
go with Pinchas. That's what they call Moshe. They refer when Pinchas came to kill Kasbian.
Right, you know, it's like when you're really mad at your kid, you say to your husband, "Do you know what your child did today?" You know, like you don't use their name. He's Ben Amram. So Kalev's got up and said, "I have something to say." I'm like, "Well, we don't want to hear." Oh, you think that's all that this guy did to us? And they're like, "Ooh, everybody quiet." Shh, 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 shh. Right. What? What's coming? What's he going to say? He's going to agree with us. And then what did he say? Hashomea, I'm continuing Rashi. Hayasavur shebalasaper bignuto. The audience quieted down because they thought they were going to get some good dirt about Moshe. Umitoch shahaya bilibam al Moshe. Because in their hearts it was about Moshe. Bishvil dimei hamiraglim. Shatukulam lishmua gnuto. Right, the whole tide is negative, so they're all like, "Ooh, let's be quiet. We get to hear more." And this guy Kalev, he's gonna really twist the knife. He's gonna seal the deal. Amai, you know what else that guy did for us? Shh. What? Hello, Karelanu etayam, v'horid lanu etaman, v'higiz lanu etaslav. He's the greatest. He drinks with the sea, and he brought the man. And we don't want to hear that. What? Right. But what did Kalev do? There's a deep psychological danger in what Kalev did. What did Kalev do? He pretended to be a part of the tide in order to co-opt it. Which is really A, dangerous, and also scary. The Midrash takes it even deeper. Okay? Meaning, the Midrash says, Shebitchila amar lehem Kalev, ani imachem be'etza achat. Kalev all along pretended to go along with the Meraglim. Meaning throughout the whole trip, in order not to set them off, right, along the trip going along, they would all say, oh, we'll never do this. And Kalev would, yeah, it's not looking good. It's not looking good. You know? And all, and in the end, his intention was to sort of co-opt them and turn them away.
Be a double agent.
Be a double agent. It's a very tricky game to play. To, you know, to want to be a part of the group, and the very last minute to say, no, no, I'm really on the other side. Because, obviously, what's the danger?
It's
South
America, Dante.
What's that?
It's South America, Dante. Dante, after all
of us. Yeah. Yeah. That's my other piece, by the way. Yeah.
Did he hold no hope after the achievement? But if he showed the spies that the positive during the time in Eretz Yisrael, that he would maybe be able to bring them over to his point of view.
Well, according to this Midrash, this Rashi, he knew he could not corrupt them, but he was hoping, I think, he could mitigate them by agreeing at first and then switching the and trying to change the discussion. Okay, so Kalev say? Vayas ha'am el Yoshua vayomer. Vayas Kalev et ha'am el Moshe vayomer. Alona levi yarashnu ota. We will go up. Vayarashnu inherited ki yachol nuchala. We will inherit. We will conquer it. Okay, because we can do it. I have a simple question. Well, there's a bunch of questions about this pasuk. First question is: did Kalev say we can do it? Or we have to go anyway. I mean, what Kalev is saying, the guys were saying, the Meraglim were saying, it's a great land, but we'll never conquer it. It's impossible. The military, it's too challenging, it's too hard. Was Kalev saying, it's not too hard? Or was Kalev saying, it is too hard, but if Hashem said that we should do it, we'll do it anyway?
B.
B? Anybody?
A.
A?
We are capable of doing it.
Good, you're both right. Or Chaim says, right. I mean, that's a trick question. Okay? On the one hand, Sforno says, I'm sorry, but Alona, Alea Bala Turim, Lomar Shafilu im Yomar Lanu. Even if God will say, Ase Sulamot Va'alula Rakia. I want you to take ladders and climb to the heavens. Shehu Mahalach, Hei Meot Shana, Na'ale. Whatever Hashem says, Alona, Ale. If God says, I want you to build ladders and climb up to the sky, that's what you do. Most other Mefarshim say no. Alona Levi, Arash Noatah, Kalev is saying, no, we could do it. They're blowing things out of proportion.
Yeah,
what?
No mention of God's plan and His words. Like, He has to base it on something, not like he must be interpreting something in the pasuk that shows him this. Kalev believed God would give them the abilities to do so.
See, it's always interesting, like, you know, when you talk about Aliyah, yeah, I'm sure you might have had this experience. Like when you say, oh yeah, we're moving to Israel, and then all of your friends, neighbors, whatever, say family, say, what?
Stop, right.
You can't make a living in Israel.
Right.
Anybody ever heard that? Right? You know what I'm saying? So what do you say?
I wish we could join you, but unfortunately...
We just can't make it. You know. Although I was just talking to a friend of mine who said, like...
How are you going to manage
it? How do they manage the tuition? I don't understand. Okay, anyway. But where's the element of emunah? So you say to them, yes, I really have faith that God will provide for us. Then what do they think about you?
Right.
I used to think you're nuts. Now I just know you're nuts. You know what I'm saying? So like Kalev has to say it in such a way, whereas it implies that Hashem will be there without saying that Hashem will, you know, protect us. So, you know, the words, Alo na'alev v'yarashnu otak, yinachol nuchala, he's really technically saying we could do it. But deep down what he's really saying is, Kadosh Baruch Hu will help us. Akash Baruch Hu will help us do it. You know, there's such a such a deep psychology there. Okay.
But according to the story that, I mean, the situation that the Midrash is presenting and that you were presenting earlier also, you said that nobody would listen to Yehoshua because he's Moshe's right-hand man.
Yeah.
But according to the Midrash, Kalev was Moshe's brother-in-law, so why would they listen to Kalev any more than they would listen to Yehoshua?
Good question. I don't know the answer, but at least he was the head of Yehuda. He was representing Yehuda.
I feel like it was...
But you raise another issue. You raise a very important issue in this pasuk, which is anybody sensitive to what the issue is? The issue is where is Yehoshua? What the heck? Vayas Kalev etam el Moshe. Kalev is hussing and silencing. Where's Yehoshua in all this? It's a really good question. It's a very powerful question. Midrash asks the question. Gemara, the same Gemara in Sota. The Gemara says the following: Amar Rabba. Shehisitan b'dvarim, what does it mean? Lahas shehisitan. Okay, that he was lahas. The word vayahas is lahasit. To twist their words, to turn them around from hasata. Dechazye Yehoshua dekamishtae. Okay, he saw that Yehoshua was delaying. Caleb saw Yehoshua, didn't say anything. Why? Amre le, the Meraglim said to Yehoshua, Den Rosh Kitia Yimalel. Tell us, Yehoshua, before you say anything, can a person without a head speak? Amar, so meaning what? What do they say to Yehoshua? You open your mouth, we kill you. And what does Yehoshua say?
Nothing.
By the way, according to the Midrash, Yehoshua had good reason to be quiet. Why? Anybody give me according to the Midrash the reason? What's Yehoshua's model?
Moshe.
No. What happened to Chur at the Eagle?
But what? Chur, no, but Chur is Kalev's grandson.
Yeah. What happened to Chur?
He got killed, but Kalev, I mean that.
Okay. Amar Kalev La'atzmo.
He's kind of like, because he knows that he's going to be the one to lead them into the land.
Yehoshua. He doesn't know, but he has, so therefore.
So it's kind of like, I'm the one that's taking Moshe's job, so I'm also going to talk about it now. You know what I mean? Like people would see.
But he didn't say anything. He keeps quiet. That's the problem.
Maybe that's why.
Huh. I think that personally, if you ask me, which Midrash doesn't, I would say the reason Yehoshua kept quiet was because he knew nobody wanted to hear what he had to say. Everybody knows you're on Moshe's side. What are you going to say? You know, like, no, Moshe's right. Thank you. And I appreciate that. You know, we're in charge. Okay, so, but Kalev said, so therefore, and Kalev realized they don't want to hear good things, so therefore he came up with this whole scheme to turn them around. What that means is, if we talk about going against the grain, imagine going so against the grain that they say, by the way, if you attempt to try to coerce this nation into going into that land, we're going to kill you. Now stand up and say something.
Well, he also learns that he won't be Moser unless he can share it.
Yeah.
He found a way.
Yeah, Rena, you want to say
The Midrash, if you say that it's laudable to stand up against everybody else, no matter what the odds, and the Midrash is condemning Yehoshua for not standing up in a way. Like, why isn't there a Midrash that says Yehoshua and Kalev discussed this together and decided that Kalev speaking would be the most effective way to get... There's no Midrash that says that.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if the Midrash is giving, given the time that the Midrash was written, if it's giving a subtle message that sometimes if you are in a leadership position and your life is on the line, that you shouldn't stand up publicly against the tide.
If nobody stood, again I ask you, what would have happened if Kalev had said nothing?
But Kalev wasn't saying nothing, and maybe it was important for Yehoshua to say nothing, because Yehoshua, you know, that Kalev was... not expendable, but not as indispensable as Yehoshua.
I mean, Yehoshua said, wow, I'm going to lead the people into the land, so therefore I better be quiet, because if they kill me now, I can't lead them into the land.
No, or they won't have a...
But if you don't say something...
I don't know, but their Midrash isn't, you know, otherwise it sounds like it's condemning Yehoshua.
Doesn't it?
I mean, I think it's a very good point, that what is to be gained by two people saying the same thing rather than one?
The Midrash says a lot. What's to be gained?
Yeah.
two against, because one guy you can discount. Two is like Trey is yeah, exactly right. That's exactly what they say. It's like a dude.
If Yoshua stood up in support of Calais, it would undermine Calais' credibility because they would say, you're just being coached by Yoshua.
I laud all of your desires to protect Yoshua's image. I do. I'm with you.
Do we have evidence Yoshua wasn't, meaning we know, but do we know from the passage that Yoshua wasn't in the original group speaking, because it just says that they all got up.
They all got up, and then, what do you mean, negatively about Israel?
Yeah.
No, I don't. Yeshua is clearly not. We'll see in a second. Let's read on. Skip, because I'm going to run out of time, and we have to get to this. Turn to Yudalid. Pasuk Dalid. We're just skipping a little bit. I'm assuming that we know the story. Vayomru ish elachim nitna rosh ben ashuv b'mitzrayimah. They say, that's it. Let's turn around, go back to Egypt. Pasuk Hey. Vayipol Moshe ve'aron al paneihem lifnei kol kahal adap b'yisim b'nei Yisrael. Aaron and Moshe, they're just like, they fall on their faces. They're just, what do we do? Pasuk Vav, v'Yehoshua ben Nun, v'Kalev ben Yefuneh, min hatarim et haaretz. These two men, Yehoshua and Kalev, karu bigdehem. They tore Kriya, because that's the, you know, it's tearing Kriya is the most visceral and most immediate protest you can make about something that you hear that's terrible. Pasuk Zayin v'Yomru, and they said, both of them, El Kol Adap b'nei Yisrael Emor. Ha'aretz asher avarnu ba'latur ta tova ha'aretz ma'od ma'od. It's very good. They continue. Im chafetz banu Hashem ve'evi otan al aretz hazot unetan alanu. If Hashem wants you, we can give it to us. Eretz asher yizabat chala b'duvash. Ach ba'Hashem al timrodu. Don't rebel against Hashem. Va'atem al tira'o etam ha'aretz. Ki lachmeinu erim. We'll eat them up like bread. Tzar tzila me'elim v'Hashem itanu al tira'o. If God is with us, what are you worried about? It'll be great. We can do this. And what do the people say? Vayomru kol ha'ida lirgom otam ba'avanim. So then the people said, finally, to stone them with, to kill them with stones. Who's otam?
Is it all four of them or just two of them?
Who's otam? To stone them. It's a machloket. Rashi says Yehoshua and Kalev. The Midrash says Moshe and Aaron. Lirgom otam. Like, it's as bad as it gets. Okay, let's skip to we know the story, and I want to get to the end. I want to get to a really beautiful and powerful Or HaChaim. Look at what Hashem says. Hashem says to Moshe, that's it, just to paraphrase, forget it, you know, close up shop. It was a nice try, you know, the whole Jewish thing, but it didn't work. You know, maybe I'll make him out of you. And Moshe says, he convinces, it's very powerful. Moshe says to Hashem, you can't do that, you have to go with him. Hashem says, fine, we're going to spend 40 years in the desert, and this whole generation is dead. We're going to start with a new generation. He says, but, turn to Pasuk Chaf Dalet. Perek Yud Dalet, Pasuk Chaf Dalet. And I'm sorry to keep flipping, but I just want to get to the point, this point. V'avdi Kalev. This is the powerful language. Ekev haita ruach acheret imo. My servant Kalev, because there was a different spirit with him. And he was complete in following me. He gets to go into Eretz Yisrael. Who is not mentioned? Yeshua. Right? Yeshua does get to lead the people. But one gets the sense that Yeshua gets to lead the people because Hashem needs Yeshua. Hashem doesn't need Kalev. You could do anybody else. Kalev gets to go into Eretz Yisrael because he deserved it. He's the only one that's named, that's specifically outlined. And what I want to know is, what is it, again, to go back to our original question, what is it about Kalev that allows him to stand up and to fight the good fight and to stand up for what's right? And the words are so powerful. Haita ruach acheret imo, a different spirit with him, vayimalei acharai. He was whole in following me. Let's look at Rashi for a second. Shtei ruchot. Rashi says, ruach acheret, shtei ruchot. He had two spirits, achat bepeh, v'chat belev. Same Rashi follows the same, you know, logic. He said one thing, but he did another. But vayimalei acharai, vayimalei libo acharai. But in the end, in reality, his heart was really following me. I have to read you Or HaChaim. It's an unbelievable, unbelievable pirush of Or HaChaim. Okay? If I could just find it. Where am I?
Go to the right parak.
Go to the right parak and the right pasuk. Here we are. Or HaChaim says, what about Yehoshua? Okay? What does it mean? Why is Kalev specifically? What does Hashem mean? He says the following. Okay, what does it mean, Ruach Acheret? Diktek Lom, I'm skipping most of it, but if you look in Arachayim and see where it says on Resh Nun He, okay, it says V'diktek Lomar B'derech Zeh. V'tzad Shiyesh Ba'adam Shnei Yoatzim. Every person has two Yoatzim, two advisors. Yoetz Ra, V'yoetz Tov L'lechet Acharei Hashem. Part of you wants you to do the wrong thing, part of you wants to do the right thing. V'hu Hishlim U'milei Acharei Chelek Hashem. And even though the Yetzer Hara was so powerful in him, and the peer pressure was so strong, and telling him, do it, go with them, follow their advice, nonetheless, he was milei acharei Hashem. V'zehu derech Amram, and this is what it says, mi sheba'a ve'ra liyado v'nitzol mimena, notnim lo schar ke'oseh mitzvah. If you feel the pressure to do an aveira, and yet you are safe from it, you make the right choice, it's as if you did a mitzvah, just by doing the right thing. Meaning, you get the credit of doing a mitzvah for not having followed the negative of doing an aveira. V'zeh eino b'Yoshua. Yoshua doesn't get that. Ki lo haita ruach acheret imo. Yoshua had the protection of Moshe Rabbeinu. He was a student of Moshe. He was Hoshiyad the tefillah of Moshe Rabbeinu.
He was the good
only, right, what?
He was the good boy.
He was the good boy. Yeah. Only Kalev felt that pressure. He really felt that, you know, that tide pushing him to go in a certain direction, and he resisted. And that's why Hashem gave him that special reward. And I think that the answer to our original question is to acknowledge the pressure and say, yes, it's really hard. But if you're aware of it and you understand it, understand that fighting it isn't in and of itself a mitzvah. That there's schar for that. That there's a value in standing up for what's right. And as Kalev, I believe, Kalev saved Bnei Yisrael. By standing up for what's right, he gave also back to Yehoshua, and he gave Moshe the opening to argue with Hashem and to continue to preserve the continuity of the Jewish people. And that's how we grow as a people. You feel pressure, everybody wants a certain thing, but somebody at some point stands up and says, I don't agree with this, and I'm going to do what I think is appropriate. And before you know it, two people are doing it, and 10 people are doing it, and in 5 years, nobody ever knew that it was an issue. Because everybody does the right thing. Okay, have a good day.